The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is proudly presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook by using promo code RTRS and brought to you by Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Get yours at bigbarker.com/Ricky. LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged. And Kinetic Skateboarding, more on this in a second, but $10 off any pair of Van slip-ons today with code RICKYSLIPS at kineticskateboarding.com. On the show today, they did it. They won the game to perhaps send us into believe mode as the Sixers win as underdogs in Milwaukee. They have beat the Grizzlies. They have beat the Nuggets. They have beat the Bucks over no bag Giannis. Also, while missing two starters at the end of the game. As well, we will talk about B-ball Paul versus the refs on Twitter. And news about merch at Live Ricky 5, which is exciting, which will, I think, piss off everybody who isn't going to be there, but we'll do that as well. The Ringer Top 100 and the mailbag. A reminder, if you are watching on YouTube, please subscribe as well. If you're watching on Spotify, follow the pod on Spotify, subscribe on YouTube. Around playoff time, you're going to want to know when we go live. So subscribe and turn on notifications. Right now, if you're watching on YouTube. Kinetic Skateboarding. We're going to have these different specials every weekend for Kinetic. So this goes only through Sunday. You go to kineticskateboarding.com. Last time I checked, there were 34 different Van slip-ons that they had available. 34 different ones, including the famous black and white checkered ones, which I ordered last time we did a Vans Van special. Go to kineticskateboarding.com. Put a pair of Van slip-ons in your cart. Use code RICKYSLIPS. Get $10 off a pair of Van slip-ons. Everybody needs a pair of Van slip-ons. Once again, Kinetic Skateboarding, code RICKYSLIPS. Without any further ado, Amos and the Chef.
Larry, sweetie, the man is here.
Say the name. I say the name. I say the name.
We will ride.
Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, a championship podcast, I might say. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who has a deeper bag than one Giannis. That is Mike Levin.
I shouldn't be allowed to watch the games. I just shouldn't be allowed to do it. I shouldn't be. I'm so glad that we don't do like live streams of me during the games because my life would be ruined and over so quick if people knew what I was like during the games. And only Alyssa does. And yesterday she was like, do you talk about the Sixers in therapy? Maybe you should. And I was like, I don't, but I don't want to. But she's like, you probably should. It was an unpleasant experience. There's no reason that they... It's arguably worse when they win than when they lose. Because when they lose, you're like, oh, I was right. I'm a fucking idiot for like believing in this team in any way. And then they come back to win. It's like, I'm a fucking idiot for believing in this team, then saying all the things, and then they come back to win. So now I feel stupid that I got all worked up from that. And it was a journey this team takes us on. But it's because like, look, every one of the Sixers shots last night to me. And obviously, I'm watching as a fan. I'm not watching as an unbiased Kevin O'Connor type. I'm watching as a fucking loser Sixers fan.
We are incredibly biased. We are absolutely so biased.
But
so
every one of the Sixers shots felt like a prayer, like a step back prayer, end of shot clock, hoisting up, and it goes in, and everyone's just like wipe sweat off their brow, like cartoonishly. And every one of Milwaukee's felt like, oh, that's an easy way to manufacture offense. Great shot, should go in, and it does. And it just felt And then they came back to win. And so I feel like an idiot on all levels. But a nice win. This team has displayed the propensity to
come back,
battle back, which is
a game that they already led before. But whatever, most times.
Yeah. But they did fight back and to actually come back and hold on to this win and hit the shots they need to hit. They really just have they have three absolutely incredible shot makers on this team. And they have very little bread and butter offense, but when they go to it in the, Harden Embiid pick and roll type thing, it's really hard to stop. And those guys can just hit shots. And when it gets down into crunch time, Embiid can be the best defender in the league. And this is really why we can talk more about it. But I'm every time it's Sixers Bucks, I am dying for it to be Embiid Giannis. Embiid has to cover Giannis. Brook Lopez is the best player in the league. He should win MVP for 10 straight years. He's going to be 35 in a month, and he's still so fucking good.
He's getting better every year.
It's unbelievable. Embiid can't cover him. He can't. So many plays. I wrote down. I should honestly. It's going to take the whole pot if I just read all the plays of Sixers overhelping and do it. I'm not going to do it. Okay. But so many times, Embiid has the help from 25 feet away. It's an easy kick to Brook Lopez, and Embiid can't get out there. You need Embiid on Giannis. I know that Doc and everybody would be worried about foul trouble, but you just got to do it because he can't protect the rim and cover Brook Lopez at the same time, and that's what they need him to do because the guys keep getting by on dribble penetration, and everyone feels the need to help.
We got an email from Billy to write StarickySanchez@gmail.com. The subject line was the worst basketball watching experience I have ever had. Hey guys, not a question, just needed to vent. I wanted to say that was the worst experience I've ever had watching a basketball game. And I can't believe it happened in a win that broke the Bucks 16 game winning streak. I had to watch.
Yes.
A Ted Cruz lookalike scored 20 points in one quarter. Giannis shoot free throws on literally six straight possessions at one point, all while Doris Burke was announcing, Niang inexplicably played essentially the whole fucking second half. I actually started to understand what my Celtics fan friend was saying, complaining about when the Bucks played the Celtics in the playoffs. I never, ever complained about the refs, but this pushed me past my limit. Such a fucking horrible game to watch. I can't believe we won. I don't even feel good about it.
Yeah, you're not supposed to feel good. That's not the intent.
Now, okay, so Embiid on Giannis, I think the other thing we saw, and we weren't able to see because he ended up leaving with back spasms that I'm sure he'll play through, but PJ Tucker on Giannis is also helpful as well. I think he does a good job on it. You're not going to want Embiid on Giannis the entire game.
I mostly want Embiid on Giannis the entire game. I would do the times that he's not on Giannis, I would do a PJ Tucker with B-ball Paul roaming. PJ did a fine job. PJ did in this game have the first help steal of the season for the Sixers. We talked about it last time. He comes over. Joe Ingles inexplicably gets by Tobias Harris. PJ comes over in the lane and just sort of rips the ball from him. And I was like, wow, how about that? We asked for it. They gave it to us. But yeah, both Tobias and PJ out with injuries now. I just think that there's no one else you can put Embiid on where he is impacting the game on the defensive end. There just isn't. If he's covering Brook Lopez, he's going to drift too far off of him, and Brook Lopez has never missed a shot.
And
if he's covering Bobby Portis,
one.
He's going to drift too far off of him, and Bobby Portis has never missed a shot. And so there's nowhere else for him to go. If you switch everything, then fine. If you go we don't want Embiid on Giannis the whole game because of foul trouble, because of energy levels, whatever. But because this is a tough matchup for Embiid offensively, or not tough, he still had a great offensive game, a less able to be dominant offensively because of how sturdy Brook Lopez is and can hold up against him. Like the play where Brook, I do think Embiid's moves at this point are getting a little predictable and guys can feel him. I mean, there's the guys that can't, if you're one of the three guys that can hang with Embiid physically, which Brook is, then if you don't bite on pump fakes and then you just stay vertical, and that's what Brook did. He blocked him on a pump fake that he didn't need to pump fake on, and then Brook had to trail three because Embiid went down. And so in a Bucks series, Embiid naturally is going to be less of a, I think Matt Carey on Twitter called it a game-breaking advantage that you have against all those other teams that just don't have anybody that can hang with him either IQ-wise or physically or whatever. So I really just need him. Embiid's matchup in this is to just like go one-on-one with Giannis and don't send help. Like for most of the game, not all the game, but really most of the game, because Embiid was great on him at the end. You can't go into his chest because he's too strong. You can't use your length because Giannis's length is Embiid's also long. He forces tough shots. He forced to travel. Like it was awesome. And it's always so awesome to see Embiid engaged like that against a guy that he feels is as good as him, rather than having to like drift over to a shooter. It's like Embiid just can't. You don't want Embiid covering stretch fives. You just don't want him doing that. He doesn't like doing it. He gives poor effort when he's doing it, and it results in a ton of wide open threes because he has to help so often.
I just think, look, because Giannis has no moves, and his basic move is to put his head down and offensive foul his way to the basket. And for some reason he gets calls on all of these things. I just think that like the odds are that more games than not, if you have Embiid on Giannis to start the game, you're going to end up with two fouls on Embiid in the first 5 minutes of the game. And by the way, like, I agree with you. He's by far the best, you know, like the best defensive option, probably like in crunch time on him that you want to be in, but also Embiid's the best offensive player on the Sixers. And we'll get to Harden in a second, because Harden deserves a lot of credit for that win yesterday. But there's so many games where you're going to need Embiid down the stretch offensively too. And if he spends, you know, the first 3.5 quarters getting the shit kicked out of him by no bag Giannis, I just think you're going to be in worse shape over an entire series. See, and eight minutes a game or something is where I'd want him on Giannis.
No, it's got to be more. It might cost more mental energy covering Giannis to be locked in all the time. But I think if you go Joel, you don't have to help. You don't have to run over from 25 feet away when you're covering somebody on 3-point line. I think it's less taxing on him to just essentially stand in the lane and allow Giannis to try to go into his chest. I understand the fouls thing, but like they're not going to foul Joel Embiid out every game. Refs won't do it. Like this is why refereeing is like inherently like a lie. Like because they don't want to give Joel Embiid the sixth foul. So they will be like self-monitoring themselves so they don't like kick him out of a playoff game, an important game. I understand. And that'll be, Doc is so rigid with what he does when guys are in foul trouble that it will ultimately be a problem because of who Doc is. But if they decided to like make this more of a strategy of like a, we're willingly doing this, and Embiid is going to have less of an offensive load in this kind of series, then I just think it's their best matchup, because really over and over again in the first half against anybody, guys getting by them, sending help, open three. It was just over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And they adjusted and corrected in the second half, largely because really Embiid covering Giannis and a couple other, like, they did a little bit better job fighting through screens, although they're still not good at it. Everybody on the team dies on screens. It's really frustrating. It really felt like, am I the only one? Like, how is this still happening? And how is Doc not like holding a press conference about it? Like someone should be held accountable. But like, cause at this point, look, is this team, you know, one roster 1 through 15, like the best equipped to handle like scrambling to get around a screen and then help on the roll and then scramble back the way that you see other teams do it? Of course not. They're not. Yeah. It is not the best. Like the roster is like half like switch everything, half just bad at defense, half like some length and like occasional athleticism, and then Embiid. But it's the reality now. Like there's no one else is coming. This is the team. And now it's on Doc or Dan Burke or whoever the fuck decides this to like adjust based on who is here. And what they're doing now is so bad and so negligent, and it's bad coaching that like they keep leaving guys wide the fuck open. Sometimes there's miscommunications, like Harden and Maxey miscommunicated on a play that I think Bobby Portis cut through and then both of them went with him. Harden's kind of just like vaguely pointed and it was a wide open corner through Grayson Allen. Sometimes there's just like bad miscommunication because guys are not as engaged defensively as they should be. But on plays when it's like pick and roll, somebody goes by, somebody helps. It's an open three every time. Like it'd be so easy to run offense against the Sixers when they're doing stuff like that. And so I just think like good coaches will then work with what they have. And thus far, these coaches have not done that on the defensive end.
You know, we had a same game parlay with DraftKings Sportsbook yesterday. That was this is the game that is going to make us believe in the Sixers same game parlay. Now it did not hit. It was plus 1500 odds, but its heart was in the right place. No, its heart was in the right place.
What leg didn't hit?
I think two of them didn't hit. So there was Sixers money line. There was Embiid over 30.5 points. Harden over 10.5 assists. He only had 10. Mm-hmm. And Tucker, two threes. So now Tucker had three wide open threes in the beginning of the game. I just felt like the reason that was perfect is because like, oh, here are all the things that will make us think this can be replicatable over and over again. So
that's fair.
So, and then MVP odds, I'm thinking about this. So now Embiid is plus 550. Giannis is plus 650. I feel like there's a better chance that Giannis wins it than Embiid. Embiid's only going to play 68 games at most, so on and so forth. The Bucks are going to have the best record in the Eastern Conference. Do we get behind Giannis for MVP just so Jokic doesn't win a third straight? I mean, I'm going to. These are all odds at DraftKings.
I'm opting out entirely.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
DraftKings. I have so many other things to be mad about. And I am.
I'd like being mad about things. Official sports betting partner of the NBA is DraftKings Sportsbook. If you're a new customer, use code RTRS and place a $5 on any pregame moneyline bet and get $150 in bonus bets if your team wins. That is, again, code RTRS, place $5 on any pregame moneyline bet and you get $150 in bonus bets if your team wins. And remember, you can boost your NBA winnings with each leg with DraftKings stepped up same game parlays. Download the app now. Use code RTRS. New customers place $5 on any pregame moneyline bet and get $150 in bonus bets if your team wins. That's code RTRS. Only a DraftKings Sportsbook. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. We should talk about James Harden.
Yeah.
Because Harden, I think, has obviously had an excellent year. I do believe he has gotten better as the year has gone on.
Yeah.
Both the, you know, I think it was in the ESPN game story said that the Harden Embiid pick and roll was 1.7 points per possession yesterday, which is
that's crazy.
A pretty high that's number, crazy. You know? So, and they used it a lot down the stretch and Harden has, but Harden, you know, like we do two podcasts a week about the same team. We got to talk about the shit that doesn't matter as much a lot, sometimes making it a bigger deal. But truly, the things that matter that we have questions on that need to be answered are things like how is James Harden going to perform in clutch moments in important games in the playoffs in the fourth quarter? And this is not the playoffs, but it was an important game against a great opponent who, by the way, does have the like horses to stick with James Harden in the fourth quarter, does have the athletes to do it. Mm-hmm. And Harden, to his credit, was just fucking awesome in the fourth quarter in a number of different ways. He came out, he looked really good. Then he was sort of iffy for the next quarter and a half or whatever. But he was so good in the fourth in so many different ways, from like scoring to distributing to and just hitting, you know, a shot with 2 seconds left on the clock when it was the only thing left to do, you know, getting to the rim with Chris Middleton on him, who doesn't really look, you know,
no, he's not
fine,
right.
But yeah. I don't know. He was fucking excellent. And of course you can't believe that it will happen in the playoffs until it happens in the playoffs, but he is answering every call at this point, you know, like you're left with nothing else to say other than he's been excellent. And especially in tough situations, he's been excellent.
Yeah, I mean, it is frustrating sometimes watching James like be so slow offensively, and so like Doc is dying for them to play with pace, and unless James sees a hit ahead pass where he can get Maxi on the wing or something, he's just going to walk it up, he's going to hold the ball for a long time, and he's going to wait for the right matchup. And so you're watching that and you're like, we're down 18, Milwaukee scores in 3 seconds, like get something going. But he just kept methodically, like precisely bringing them back with slow but correct reads. I mean, they scored 48 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
They scored 48 points in the fourth quarter. And he was just awesome. Every game, it feels like Harden's shooting like 5 of 9 from three. He was 5 of 9 last night. Every game, he's over 40%. It is startling to just look at his career three-point percentage numbers year by year and see how much of a leap this year is. And it feels that way. It feels like he's got good lift on his shot. It feels like he's getting more open looks. He's taking more off the catch, all that stuff. But he didn't turn the ball over last night, which has been a problem lately. He got to line a bunch 11 times. That's a lot for him this year. I mean, the thing I liked maybe the most, he got 4 offensive rebounds. And he was fighting for those. This is a team that doesn't get 50-50 balls against a team that really, really does. And Joel's still not a great rebounder, and it's frustrating. This season is definitely the worst rebounding season of Joel's career.
Statistically, it is by every measure.
And it feels that way also. Yeah. It's just very true.
Well, the ones that, by the way, like you could talk scheme and talk this, that, the other. Like there are too many rebounds that like land right next to him that he's staring at.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like it just doesn't look like he's that interested in it.
Yeah, for sure. But Harden getting a couple loose balls. He tied up Bobby Portis on a jump ball. I like that. And then didn't he win it? I think he won that jump ball too. In the first half, there was a few too many like mid-range jumpers, like him deciding to take those. It felt like the most of the season, and just in the first half, he was just taking all of them. But man, he's getting to the rim late. He was blown by Chris Middleton. He was just kept picking whoever. He was just, it felt very like I'm a quarterback in full control of the field, and we can get whatever shot I want to get at any point. And it'd be nice if like maybe the shot clock was like 28 seconds, so he didn't have so many like end of shot clock heaves. But man, I mean, yeah, you can talk about the defense, and he's varying levels of locked in on that end. But offensively, he's having an excellent, excellent, excellent season. And it really feels like, I don't know if you watched the post game.
I did not. 8:30 start post game. Fucking, I can't believe people are doing post game at an 8:30 start.
Post game interview with Malika and Joel and James, and she says like this is the first time since, I think she's like somewhere in the 60s that. Two Sixers players have had 30 points and 10 assists in the same game. And when she said that, both Joel and James were like, oh, like Joel had 10 assists. Like they were like, oh, look at that. Like I can pass. Like it was a really funny reaction to them. And it's nice to see them both. Like they like each other. Like they like being around each other. And I think they like playing with each other. And then for sure there's like sacrificing and everyone thinks they're the man and all that stuff. But like the belief that this team has in each other in those two guys, it's like
Mike's back.
No, I'm not. I'm really not. And yesterday was miserable. But at least back. there's some saving grace of like watching them be like they're.
It's where we pretend the vibes are really great.
I'm not saying it. Embiid looks like he's like frustrated. And he was like annoyed and like he's been a couple times. Yeah. Like there's a few times, and then there was one play. We'll talk about B-Ball Paul once we get to him. But like B-Ball Paul gets an N1, getting Giannis to bump, and you see Embiid on the bench, like really fired up. And it's like, okay, there's something there. And I think you watch James and Joel, like they like and want to support and want each other to like just totally kick ass. And that's nice. And it's, you know, the season, it was Ben and Joel for a while. And obviously that was, you know, frayed. And it was nobody when Ben was holding out. And then it was Harden for like the last couple of months. And so this is the first year that's like, these are the two guys. They each have very different and helpful skills to each other. And they seem to, despite random Harden to Houston rumors that keep coming back, they seem to really just like enjoy each other. And that's good. And that's, I'm not saying the vibes are good. I'm not saying like something feels different. It feels very frustrating all the time watching this team. But simply those two guys liking each other is a nice change.
Mike's back.
Nope.
Mike's back.
No, he's not.
It was a nice moment to see George Niang hit some big shots. I like we can,
five of six from three, not yeah. just some big shot. That's a
no. It was a game that I feel like we're getting used to him having. There was a point in which this season and maybe even last season too, where you expected every George Niang three to go in.
Yeah,
and then over the last 2.5 weeks, it seems like no George Niang threes went in, which made his entire existence just fucking torture as a basketball viewer, because like everything that is funny about him when the threes are going in is fucking torture when they're not going in.
Yeah.
But that said, with Tucker hurt and Harris hurt and them really having to go to Niang, and then, but even like the beginning of that fourth quarter, I don't know. When he's on, he is obviously a great player to have on the court with Harden, because he is such a willing shooter and such a quick shooter, and at times such a great shooter. It was just, I felt, we don't have to debate his playoff playableness every time we talk about him. For that game yesterday, it was nice to see him hit those shots, and they do not win that game without Niang yesterday.
No, for sure. I mean, I don't think it's unreasonable to talk about which guys can hold up in the playoffs.
Just not every time.
Us. Yeah, I understand.
We don't need to do it, you know, yeah, every time.
Here's the difference in Niang versus PJ Tucker. Niang can get his shots off so quickly, and yeah, PJ Tucker needs to be so wide open that no one can even like see him on the court. No one, you have to like squint to see like someone in the distance. He has to be 20 feet away from anybody to shoot. And the quick trigger of Niang, where he can get it up so fast, means that Giannis can't roam off of him the way that he roams off of PJ Tucker, the way that he like just wants to get use his length to, you know, deflect passes and to deter rim attacks, all that stuff. And it's just really nice that like little slip screen Harden pick and pop with Niang like can just get an open look for Niang so easily off the catch, and that's really, really nice to see. And I just, there's just not that many guys in this team. They didn't get one at the trade deadline. There's not many guys on this team that can just get a shot up really quickly. It's really just Niang. Maxey can do it, but obviously he's shorter and needs a lot more space. And Korkmaz has been out of the rotation since his seventh trade request. So it you just need a guy that can get a quick shot up when you have a guy like Embiid that can spray things out from the post or the high post, and like Harden, who's just trying to like with precision get anybody wide open looks. And I understand like his shots, he hasn't been hitting shots lately. His defense has not looked good. It feels like those things feed each other. And they're going to, he does have like a kick me sign on the back of him when teams are looking to exploit somebody defensively. But those are really helpful things that this team doesn't have. And I think in the wrong matchup, or if he's not hitting, like, yeah, take him out of the rotation, cycle through things, stay loose, stay flexible about those last few rotation spots. But when he's on, like, he adds an element to this team that they just don't have.
Yeah, AU wrote about it, and we've mentioned it as a bummer that he's so important, but he is. Like, he being able to shoot, but he does the same thing that Danny Green did in that way. And like Danny Green was always incredibly willing to jack up any three, regardless of how hot he was or wasn't. And, you know, he was a good defender as well. But offensively, Danny Green was like way too important. And I think Niang is too. Let's talk about B-ball, Paul. Because B-ball had, like, I would say an uneven game. But because he, you know,
when's B-ball ever been even?
You're right. And when he was on, he got, you know, to get obliterated by Giannis once or twice. Giannis is a big, strong guy, basically, because he can't dribble or do anything. He runs over people. It's hard not to get run over by him. But I like
this is the beginning of your Giannis for MVP campaign.
Yes. Well, I'm trying to do both. I'm trying to weigh both.
Yeah, I can see it.
I want people to be clear that I don't think, you know, he's the most skilled player, but anyway. But B-ball, once again, I think, like, continued to persevere, had a couple of incredibly important rebounds, had a couple of the and one he had on Giannis was really big. And once again, while he's on the court, obviously Harden's on the court and Yang's hitting big shots again, but they went on another run at the beginning of the fourth with him playing there.
Yeah.
He sets 6.7 screens per possession, I think 350 per 36.
Yeah.
Paul is, he's just getting better with the minutes he plays. And it does, if only there were a way to have played him in previous years or
That's
even
crazy.
This season previously. So he'd be even better now.
Yeah. I mean, he's the best, dude. He's the best. There's an energy level that he provides on a team that is so bad at rebounding. He's good at rebounding. We need guys good at rebounding. And our friend Weekly Becky was calling for him to play some four. And especially without Tobias and PJ, and who knows how long those guys will be out. If PJ comes back and plays on Monday, I'm going to be furious. If he comes back, if he misses zero game, I'm going to lose my mind. Take a game off, PJ. It's Indiana. Yes, absolutely play him at the four. Embiid, you know, playing with other shooters, obviously, but like Embiid needs some load off of him as far as cleaning up the defensive rebounding. Like he just isn't that good this season. And it's in the playoffs, he's going to get better. He's going to want everything. But right now, the energy level that Paul provides on both ends is extremely valuable. And Embiid was willing to take threes last night, 3 of 5 from deep. That's nice to see. Too many games where Embiid's only taken like one or two. And so once in a while, not for the whole game. Nobody's saying like B-ball Paul should start at the four, but like
he
could play minutes at the four, and it's helpful for the rest of the team. And I just loved, he just gets offensive rebounds. He got Giannis to bite on a pump fake, which I fucking leapt out of my couch. And he's awesome. And like, everybody feels it when he does something well, everybody feels it because they don't have a guy like that. Jalen McDaniels is another example of like that putback dunk. Nobody else is doing that.
Yeah.
On this team.
It was really nice. Awesome. It felt like I was watching a different team.
Yeah. Finally he connects on a dunk. He's probably like 1 for 8 on dunks, but like, I love the attempts. And indication of why he's more valuable, obviously more valuable than Matisse offensively, even if he's not that much better of an outside shooter, is because people know that he's an offensive player. And so Giannis has to really contest on that kick out three to Jalen McDaniels, where if it was Matisse, nobody would really contest it. And so because Giannis contests it, he runs into him, Jalen hits all three free throws. That's a huge, huge play. And so that kind of energy level on both ends, like, it's just really nice. And good for Jalen, good for B-ball Paul, both being like, you know, B-ball frozen on the bench and Jalen playing for a horrible team, like all of a sudden getting in like meaningful minutes in a hectic road playoff atmosphere.
If they touch their arms finger to finger and put them out like wingspan size, they could cover the entire court, Jalen McDaniels and B-ball Paul. So earlier today, before we get to the rest of the players, Rebel was barking out the front window and I screamed at him. I just couldn't take it. It was too early. I screamed, "Shut the fuck up." And then immediately I felt sorrow as I had yelled at my dog. That happens every time I yell at my dog. I think this is a dog owner thing, that anytime you do anything to them to discipline them, you immediately feel guilty. I do, which is one of the reasons that I make sure Rebel sleeps on a Big Barker therapeutic dog bed. Because the times I yell at him, I want him to remember that I love him when he's sleeping on the bed. There's no other dog bed available that is going to keep your dog healthier. No other dog bed available. No other dog bed engineered by experts to keep your dog healthier. Go to BigBarker.com/Ricky. BigBarker.com/Ricky. You get the Big Barker dog bed, any size, any color, with the headrest, without the headrest, for your tiny dog, for your giant dog, whatever. You get the 2 process pup patches for free if you go to BigBarker.com/Ricky. But as I said, keeps your dog healthier. Penn Vet did a study on Big Barker dog beds. So improvement in joint function, reduction in pain severity, reduction in joint stiffness, improvement in gait, improvement in quality of life, all from the Penn Vet study. This is a real thing. You can tell when you look at them, they are real mattresses, real support, as opposed to the fluffy piece of shit that you purchased at the pet store or you saw on Instagram, unless that Instagram ad was for Big Barker. Go to BigBarker.com/Ricky, get yourself a Big Barker dog bed. You're going to be like, "Oh, it's a little expensive for a dog bed." Well, it's 10-year warranty. Foam doesn't flatten or they replace it for free. 10 years. 1-year at-home trial. If you don't like it, if it doesn't work out for you, they will not only give you a full refund, they will pay for the shipping to get it back to them. Handmade in the USA. Big Barker dog beds. Maxi?
A low-key maxi game, but a pretty great one.
Hit some big shots when they needed them.
Hit some big shots. Got to the line a lot. Yeah. That's nice to see. Like, he is, I think I talked about it a little bit on the last pod, but man, he's just so good at finishing in transition. Even if he's 1-on-2 and he doesn't even have a step on somebody, he can get by somebody so fast. And there's such a small window where he can get that ball up on either side. It's borderline automatic. Is such an impressive player and such a thrill to watch, and you wish that this team gotten out and transitioned more so that he could just keep doing that. And it's crazy to be doing that at like 6'2", 6'1". He's got to get stronger this summer.
Yeah,
he really has to.
I think it will allow him, but not only will it help him defensively, but it will allow him to, I think he'll get more foul calls
for sure,
you know, because he'll finish through contact. It will look more like he got fouled than it looks right now, which is, I think, part of the reason why he doesn't get calls.
Yeah. I mean, he's just like an electric offensive player, and it's so fun to watch him do stuff and get out and have the ball, like anything. And just watching him defensively, you're just like, can't you just be a little, like, he should be able to get around screens easier. He should be able to contest easier. His wingspan's not great, obviously, but like his athleticism should be able to be like, I can be in somebody's grill all the time. And he was playing a little soft off of some guys, and then all of a sudden it's an open three because he's not contesting too hard. Like it's unfortunate. Like, he should be able to be the worst defensive player on the court, with how much of an offensive role he takes on and is capable. But we have James Harden, and so one of them needs to be better defensively. And it's, Harden had a couple of nice moments and on ball. He's going to be fine on ball for the most part, especially against bigger guys. But Maxey needs to be better. He needs to be able to like mirror, you know, the Trae Youngs and Drew Holidays and Kyle Lowry's and all those kinds of guys, that he can just like hang with them and not be able to get, you know, exploited that way. And it's tough, but I loved one of my favorite plays of the game to almost seal the deal. Skies for a rebound, gets fouled, and then does the smacking the floor thing, which we have in our intro video. Mm-hmm. This was an even more like, that was like an I'm having fun and this is like, I fucking want this, which I love. He's great. He's so great. And it's a joy to watch him play. It's watching him continue to get better and find ways to impact the game. And I just want to see that more on the defensive end.
I'm looking to, I bet there's not odds yet. No, there aren't on DraftKings. How much should people put on the Pacers money line for Monday night?
Well, the Pacers are also playing today. So the Pacers will be on the second end of a back-to-back.
Yeah.
It's pretty, yeah. It's almost like too obvious that it can happen, but yeah. it certainly might. Where do you stand on the staggering conversation with Harden and Embiid? This is a really Sixers Adam corner that he yes. lives on, and so I've steered away because I like Adam having his thing. But
so I was thinking about it earlier. I'm glad you brought it up. This sounds elementary the way I'm going to talk about this, but I don't think people think about it when they think about the staggering thing. The only way to stagger them is for them to play less minutes together.
Of course.
Or play more minutes. So we don't want them to play more minutes. And they are incredible together. And they're going to need to, like, they don't have years and years and years of games together to figure this thing out. You could argue that it was halfway through this season that it even began to really figure it out from a offensive standpoint. Like, I just think there's too much. They don't play the same position. It's not like staggering Chris Paul and James Harden, right? Like, it's a different thing. I think people make too much of it. And I think Adam makes too much of it. I think Kyle makes too much of it. I think what you're not considering is that if they are incredibly dominant when they're up, that is creating more room for them to score points when they're together, which should make the time that they're not, like, that they're not on the court, should create more of an advantage. I just think there's more push and pull to it than I think people talk about. So that's my position. Yours?
I just don't think that there's they can still play 30 minutes a game together while not leaving. I mean, honestly, lately, because of how good B-Ball Paul's been, like, they've been better. When, you know, Embiid was a -7 in this game, mm-hmm. And they won by 3 on the road against a title contender. But yeah, I think, look, in the early parts of the season, sure. Like, tinker, play around. Let's see what the bench lineup's got. Let's obviously limit their minutes and all that stuff. They are playing like a crazy amount of minutes, and all of their minutes at this point are in like tough games. Every game has like gone down to the wire. These are taxing minutes in March when we really need everybody to be healthy in April. So I'm definitely not saying play them more. It is a simple way to make sure that you're not going into a 10-0 hole with like Shake Milton being your best offensive option. Like you look at the lineups and you're just like, why? It could, they're both sitting on the bench. Like one of them could be in, they're both here. Why not? As we get later in the season, I don't think it's going to happen in the playoffs. I think Doc has a little bit learned his lesson, but I think I'm not so concerned about like, hey, they're only playing like 28 minutes together a night. Like it should be 32. So like make sure that they're both sitting at the same time. Like I just feel like there's a way to be like, hey, this is the, and the other thing is they play better with James sometimes when they can play fast, when they can play hit ahead, when they can play spread everybody out.
Sure.
And set screens and move. It's nice to see James out there without Joel because, you know, in that second Miami game, when everybody was just like flying around the court, it was like, wow, this has juice. Like I want to be able to bottle that in minutes when Embiid's sitting, and you need James out there to do that, to spray the ball around the court. And it's nice when it's Embiid to be like, okay, we got Embiid. We got a ton of shooters that are willing to shoot off the catch. We're going to play Embiid ball here. And it's nice to have the offense that
are willing to shoot off the catch. We just said George Niang is the only one.
Yeah. Well, George Niang, Melton was willing. He's up and down lately. Melton, weirdly, a minus 19. He hasn't closed a game in like a really long time.
I bet he's got something physically going on. I sort of have like a bet that that's happening that we don't know about. Has not been quite as good the last month or so, and just doesn't look like the same guy.
What am I going to say to that? Something
physically going on. What's that?
What am I going to say to that?
That he should rest more.
Ah, how about that? Yeah. Interesting. Interesting when you're hurt, maybe take a game off or two. Like I get Michael Jordan being like, there's somebody here to see me every night. But like, as much as I loved Anthony Melton, like
nobody's
coming to see. Yeah. Take a night off, bud. And I just want Korkmaz to play like a rotate. Like just let him play against the Pacers. I feel bad for the guy. Play. He's sitting there. He's frowning. Like, let him do it. Let him take like 8 shots in 2 minutes. It's fine. I'm definitely pro at this point in the season. One of Embiid or Harden should be on the court at all times. And it's both for the team's benefit and so that each guy can have the like, okay, it's my time ball a little bit.
So, I wanted to let everyone know, and there will be some leftovers, I believe, after the show. We have 2 shirts that will be available at Live Ricky 5. One from our all-time artist, Abby, who has only done 1 shirt before, the B-Ball Paul Victory Tour shirt. Mm,
success.
And then we were able to do a collabo with Heavy Slime, who is a Philly legend. I'm pretty excited about this. You can follow him on Instagram at @HeavySlime_. His fucking Instagram got wrecked and he had to start from scratch. But I've purchased several shirts from him. So 2 shirts coming from 2 different fucking... And this is a good thing to look at if you're not watching on YouTube or if you're on Spotify, look at. Coming from different edges of the art world. The Heavy Slime shirt is very Heavy Slime and is fucking awesome. He's got the Grim Reaper in there. He's got the skeleton digging out the mud. A Say the Name Ricky shirt. Just honored to have Heavy Slime doing a Ricky shirt. Incredible, right? So he'll be there selling. And then Abby asked me, could I do a CJ shirt? So the Unsung Heroes shirt.
CJ fist pumping. I don't hear him saying yeah enough, but he's fist pumping.
CJ and B-Ball Paul, pink art on a cream t-shirt.
It's really cool.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome. It looks like a comic book almost, Unsung Heroes.
Yeah, CJ and B-Ball Paul falling in love in this shirt, which I really like a lot.
They'll both be available at Live Ricky 5, and anything that we don't sell at Live Ricky 5 will sell online. So psyched to have them both doing them. So different as well. So just honored. Somebody who I believe will buy both of those shirts is one LL Pavorsky of LL Pavorsky Jewelers. We love LL. Been at every Live Ricky, been at every Ricky event.
Oh, shit. I'm not wearing my ring. I'm going to get my ring. One sec.
Okay. Oh, his wedding band. There you go. LL Pivorsky Jewelers, the first sponsor of the Ricky, but the truest sponsor of the Ricky. This is not a slag on any other Ricky sponsor, but LL Pivorsky, the truest sponsor of the Ricky, the first one. 315, did he tell me? 313, writes Ricky Sanchez, listeners have purchased engagement rings from LL, treats them all like rose gold, as Mike would say. You just notice there's a difference. You go into any other jewelry store and they're on you. They're just fucking pressure, pressure, pressure. There isn't that pressure from LL. He is going to take care of you. You are in good hands when you're with LL. Can we see the wedding band, Mike?
Yes, you can. Bang.
There you go. Let's see. How is that rose gold?
It is rose gold.
Oh my God. Of course it is.
Why wouldn't it be? I like the little indentations thing. So it's not just plain and flat. I like to think there's a little texture to it.
Yeah.
I love it. LL's the best. Alyssa loves her bands.
There you go.
It's great, man. He's the best. Truly. I love our sponsors because it's easy to talk about them because they're great and they're local and they're weirdos like us. And LL's just, he's been with us since the beginning. And I love him. I love the guy.
If you want to get an engagement ring from LL or wedding bands or just a gift, you can reach out, make an appointment. 215-627-2252. 215-627-2252 is the phone number. Perhaps you want to email
it. I'm going to lose it so quickly. Every day that goes by, I don't lose it. I'm like,
what, wedding band?
Yeah. I'm playing with it all the time. I'm futzing with it. I'm just like looking at it. It's nice.
I was never a jewelry guy,
so this is a new thing for me.
Yeah, I'm a ring player, and I did lose one wedding band. I had a panic moment as I thought I lost it only a couple years into marriage, and then I actually lost it.
I'm gonna do it like a couple weeks, and it's gonna any minute now. It's gonna happen, and I'm playing with it. I'm doing like Lord of the Rings things with myself, like pretending I'm Gollum. Like it's gone. It's gonna be gone.
I'm a tapper. I love tapping. Sure.
I'm tapping on the steering wheel. I'm figuring it out. I'm finding out what kind of ring guy I am. I'm a wife guy. Now I'm a ring guy.
215-627-2252. Lee at llpivorsky.com. At llpivorsky on Twitter. Supports our charities, Providence Animal Center and Mama T's Community Fridge. LL Pivorsky Jewelers.
I love him. That's it.
Before we get to the mailbag, there was a moment on Twitter earlier this week with B-Ball Paul. That was, you know, you've often said that Joel Embiid is the most human Sixer that we've had. I think B-Ball Paul is like fighting for that crown.
That's because
this was pretty human. So B-Ball Paul did have a little bit of foul trouble in the Mavericks game, including one call that was definitely bullshit. That the fact that they even looked at it for a flagrant was unbelievable, in which he quote unquote fouled Christian Wood.
Yeah, we're watching
it now. 3-point attempt. He didn't even touch him.
Didn't touch him.
So, and CJ is showing this on the video. Paul tweets at official NBA refs with video of the of the play. How is this a foul? Can you please explain? I clearly gave him more than enough space to land, so no need to fall.
No need to fall is funny.
Then quote tweets his own tweet. I understand referees are human and make mistakes. Ain't nobody perfect. I'm just asking so I know what I need to do differently so I don't lose my minutes. Mm-hmm. Then responds to that tweet, I should have said foul trouble instead of losing minutes.
No, you were right. You were right. I didn't see this part. I only saw the first one. Wow.
Oh, yeah. It's so good.
Wow.
He is making the battle for most human Sixer.
Certainly the most Mike Sixer.
Yeah.
Starting to complain about the refs. Yeah. I mean, just, I feel like refs should feel much more shame all the time of like being the most gullible people on the planet, of just like guys falling down and like pretending their ankle hurts. And the refs are like, well, he did. Like when you watch that replay for flagrant, like you should have to like pants yourself if you're a ref. You should be forced to like, I'm going to ref the rest of the game with my pants down at my ankles because of how silly I am here. Ridiculous.
The hard to stomach YouTube comment of the week comes from Bill. Not sure why we automatically think the Sixers will be the third seed. Sixers have the hardest remaining schedule and the Cavs have the easiest remaining schedule. It is interesting. We do have them locked into the third seed, but they are only, so they're 2.5 games ahead of the Cavs. They are 4 games ahead of the Knicks, who have won 8 in a row. Look, I actually, if they end up as the four seed, I really don't think it's that big a deal because I'm not particularly scared of the Knicks, though I do think it would be more of a grind than playing the Nets. Like the Nets seem like a 4-1 series to me, whereas the Knicks seems like a potentially 4-2 series for me. But either way, you're playing the Bucks or the Celtics in the second round. So what fucking difference does it make?
Yeah. And those guys are going to be battling for the last, for the number one seed for the
entire
season.
Yeah.
Sixers play the Cavs Wednesday, March 15th in Cleveland, which is the night before March Madness begins, which is very exciting for me. So if they win that game, then pretty likely they'll have the tiebreaker. It'll be 2-1. Then it'll be hard to give up the three seed. Yeah, I mean, I agree on the one hand, very likely that if they win that second round matchup, then they will have to play one of Milwaukee and Boston. And if they happen to win that matchup, knock on everything, then they would happen to play the other one of Milwaukee and Boston. But there's Cleveland's good, man.
They are very good.
Cleveland is good. They play hard. They got two guys that can score from anywhere that can get crazy hot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're well coached. Like Boston and Milwaukee are not infallible. And an ankle twist here or there, all of a sudden it's a Sixers hosting Cleveland for a chance to go to the finals. So I wouldn't rule, it's not a 0% chance of happening. So I would prefer the 3-4, obviously. And also that first matchup. So it's not, you know, the 5 seed is probably going to be at this point, maybe the Knicks, who look really good right now. The 6 is more likely to be Brooklyn or Miami. Brooklyn keeps dropping.
Yeah. Miami, I don't want to play first.
No, I don't, but it would be, I don't think they'd lose to Miami. I feel like, something weird is going on with Miami this year. The shooting has like totally regressed. Every time Bam takes a jump shot, I'm like clapping my hands and hooting and hollering, like begging him to keep doing it because he's just not, his range extends to like 7 feet. And Embiid just gets him, man. Like I'm just not, and Bam is the perfect matchup for Embiid because he's not big enough to hold up. He doesn't have a jump shot. He rim runs and can catch lobs and stuff, but it's just, I'm totally fine with that matchup if Embiid is healthy. Last year they split 2-2 with Embiid missing the first two games, so just not that big of a deal to me. But obviously, would prefer to play Brooklyn, this version of Brooklyn who's not that good.
Mailbag time. Writes to RickySanchez@gmail.com or 833-LICKFACE to leave us a voicemail. This comes from Dan. Hey Spike, longtime fan of the Ricky, longtime fan. When you would be the only one to talk about the Sixers. Long story short, I'm moving to Chicago from Philly. I remember you mentioned that you lived there for a few years and wanted to get your thoughts on a comparison to Philly. Personally, I'm really excited, but the winters scare me. What are the best and worst parts of living in Chicago compared to living on the East Coast? I will say the one thing that I underestimated about living in Chicago is the difference in winter between Chicago and Philadelphia. I thought to myself, oh, I go through winter. It's fine. It gets cold. It's different in the Midwest. Chicago, Minneapolis, yada, yada, yada. It's fucking really cold in the winter. But in the spring and the summer, I don't believe that there's a better city in America than Chicago. The people are nicer, which takes a little bit of getting used to, but is actually quite nice once you adapt to it. There's an awesome music scene, awesome restaurant scene, awesome like culturally, and it is, you don't need to own a car if you live in Chicago. I think it has a better public transportation system than New York. It's way better than Philly, obviously, where you have to live on one of two streets to take the subway, but or close to one of those two streets. But Chicago is excellent. I think you'll have a great time. 833-LICKFACE is the voicemail line. How about this one?
Hey, Spike. Hey, Mike. This is Dave from Delco. In honor of Mike's wedding, I just wanted to call in and leave a
speech about my mom from my childhood. My buddy Josh was out there at the wedding
Over the weekend, and it made me think to tell this story from when I was 13 years old, had my bar mitzvah. Mike's mom, shout out Toby Levin, was the head of the congregation and decided she was going to speak at my bar mitzvah. So she asked my buddy Josh, went to Mike's wedding, for something about me. And he was a 13-year-old kid and had no idea. So he was like, he likes video games. So Toby got up and announced in front of a room full of 113-year-old boys that I was a video game master, but forgot to hit both of those M's hard enough and ended up telling all of my seventh grade buddies that I was a video gay master. I've never lived that down. I've been made fun of for the last 25 years about that story. So much love. Congratulations, Mike, and TTP. Thanks, guys.
Wow. I know it was a very personal story, but it made me laugh out loud when I heard it. And it seems like a very mom.
No, that's thrilling. I'm excited to get a statement from my parents responding to that. Josh is the son of my parents' oldest friends. And so great stuff.
It seems
I'm really happy to hear this. This is feels like an integral part of my life that I'm just learning now.
It feels like something that would happen at like Paul's bar mitzvah in the Wonder Years or something. Mm-hmm. Like it feels like a sitcom story. Yeah,
it's a perfect thing to happen to a 13-year-old boy in the late 90s.
Writes RickySanchez@gmail.com. This comes from Chris from Melbourne. Hi, guys. Reassessing Mike's disregard for Mac McClung and a comment from Spike that he has a chip on his shoulder. Is Mike implying that a short white guy himself, Mike, might be jealous of Mac's ability to dunk and the fact that he got a two-way contract? This got me thinking about the sport more fundamentally. I grew up playing and watching soccer and only got into watching basketball seriously in the 7 or 8 years recently. In soccer, over the last 3 decades, the governing bodies have made rule changes to speed up the game and protect players more. This has increased the need for skilled players and meant the average size of soccer players is shorter now than it was in the 80s, with the majority of players ranging from 5'7 to 6'2. There are a few outliers, of course, but I can only think of one or two players over 6'6. Larger players are often considered slow, uncoordinated, and unable to maintain the intensity of smaller players. This would obviously mean that Tyrese Maxey and Mac McClung would be considered the largest soccer players. Do you think the NBA should try and modify the rules so there's less advantage to being tall, increasing the talent pool of players and increasing the overall skill level? Can you think of any rules that would help achieve this without fundamentally changing the game? Would Mike have made it pro if the average height in the league was a bit shorter?
No, I wouldn't have.
I overall it's an interesting question.
Am I jealous of Mac McClung for being able to dunk? Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm jealous of everyone that can dunk. It's a real damper on being alive that I can't be, that I have never dunked and will never dunk. It sucks. I don't think that, I mean, we've already sort of, so many centers have been like played out of the league.
Sure.
Because of how much the talent level and skill level has gone up. There used to be like, every team used to have like a bruising power forward type, mm-hmm. in addition to a bruising center type. And that's not the case anymore because you need more guys that can shoot. The floor is so spread. The skill jump from the players now offensively to the players in the past is ridiculous. Like Jrue Holiday hit a step back three from the corner last night, like a tough step back three from the corner, guarded.
It was stunning, honestly.
Like if that happened in 2004,
yeah,
like people would have like thrown their TVs out the window. Now it's so commonplace. And a lot of that is because of Harden, like it's really revolutionizing the step back as part of the game. But like, it's unbelievable. If you watch a game, not that guys weren't good in the past, but just like the individual skill levels of players the levels have lifted so high that, that it's already like taken the tall guys that can't do much mostly out of it. Not all the way, but a lot of them. I don't think that doing more of that would be a good idea. What I like is that like how good you have to be in the NBA at like 6'6", 6'1", It's like, it's stunning. So even like a guy like Jordan McLaughlin, like you watch him and you're like, man, like you have to, Monte Morris, like you have to be so precisely good at exactly what you're good at to survive, because there's so few spots for those sort of one positional defenders. It's really that I like, but no, I don't think so. I'm not going to make the NBA.
Short answer is it's already sort of happening, but there will always be an advantage of being taller because you'll be closer to the rim. I mean, like, I know that sounds crazier, but like the higher you are and the closer you are to getting the ball to where it's going to go is going to give you an advantage. And I think that advantage will always be there. So I agree. Non-basketball question. I had a disagreement about ghosts with a friend while staying in an Airbnb recently. Despite everyone having an HD camera on their phone, the video evidence for ghosts seems to have reduced or entirely disappeared since the mid 80s blurry footage heyday. Do people who believe in ghosts need to grow the fuck up? I have this argument with my wife a lot, who she believes in ghosts, but does not believe that aliens are possible and believes that zombies could happen.
Could happen.
Yeah. Real zombies, not infected. I'm talking about dead, then back to life zombies, which is what a zombie is. Not like somebody with a disease that goes crazy. I think that could happen for sure. I do think people who believe in ghosts probably need to grow the fuck up. Aliens, you could make the same argument with aliens, that we have all these cameras and we don't have a picture of it. And if all that means is that aliens have not been here, it does not mean that there's not forms of life somewhere. The universe is too vast to not have any life anywhere else. But ghosts does seem like a fucking tooth fairy sort of dream to me. Your position on ghosts?
Surrounded by people who believe in them and don't feel strongly enough to disagree and have an active imagination, that I can be pretty scared pretty easily. So I think, yeah, LA and like Santa Cruz and like this kind of lends itself, you know, the Southwest, like really lends itself to,
ghost people,
ghosts being a part of it, and like friggin' seances and, saging places and all that stuff. So it's just like, all right, fine. I hope they're nice. If I feel a ghost in the sleep, I'll say like, please, all good. I don't know.
Like, does anyone really think the Ouija board is moving on its own? Like the people?
No, not the Ouija board. That feels light. But I think people have like visions when they're like in and out of sleep, like in between, like the blurred. It is weird to think like sleep itself is very weird.
Sure.
Like you think about the idea of just like, okay, we're human beings, and every time, and just like every day for some amount of 6 to 9 hours of night, you're just like, I'm going to rest here and allow myself to be attacked by anybody, just so I can recharge. It's just it's an odd thing that, you know, obviously it's part of being human.
833 lick face.
Maybe I'm anti-sleep.
Spike and Mike, my name is James B. This is the first time I've ever called you guys. I've been listening for 5 years. The reason I'm calling is because Mike has pushed me to my brink with his agenda pushing this year, his agenda surrounding offense and his agenda surrounding Maxi. He's always been randomly the defensive guy, obsessing over the defense of players at the tail end of the bench for all different NBA teams and the Sixers. But now he's randomly just obsessed with offense and first off, Mike, you're lying. You're lying when you say you trust the offense of this team more than you trust the defense of this team. You know, and you guys have talked about on the podcast that Maxi doesn't have that big of a bag. He has like three things that he does. You guys know this. Like he'll go to the rim as fast as he can. He'll try to do a step back three, or he'll try to like kind of hesitate, get the defender on his back and shoot a mid-range kind of floater thing. But the thing about that is like, he doesn't get calls. So half the time it just feels useless. Y'all talk about all the time that if the step back isn't falling for Harden, then there's nothing else he can do offensively trying to score his own shot. Y'all know that this team is built around two slow players with Embiid and Harden. So we can't get up the floor a million times to score a million points. We're 16th in points per game, but we are top three in points allowed. You don't believe in the offense, then you do more than the defense of this team. You're trying to push this agenda because you want to coddle Maxey like the rest of this fan base. And it's ridiculous. Melton should be the one starting. All the analytics say that this team with the Melton lineup is one of the best lineups in the league. Mike, you're trying to push an agenda. I love you. Love both of you. Love Positive Spike.
Well, Mike,
so the agenda? Offense, well, the you're doing points per game. The Sixers have the 26th slowest pace and the fastest pace in the league. They're a slow team. So their offensive points per game is going to be lower and their defensive points per game is also going to be lower. Right now, they are 7th in offense, 8th in defense per net rating. I just, and this is a podcast that I've already talked about Maxey's defense, and Maxey did go to the line 8 times last night, so this is an interesting voicemail to get. But I trust the offense with James Harden, Joel Embiid being like the two of the top, let's say, 10 offensive players in the game, and Maxey being very good as well. I trust the offense more than the defense. Absolutely. Absolutely, I do. It's you watch too many and...
Are you coddling Tyrese Maxey?
I might be. Yeah, I might be.
Okay.
For sure. I think that's a reason. Because I want to like, because he's so charming and joyous, and he provides a level of speed to this team that they've just never really had. And so I love that. But the defense is the concern for me. The defense is absolutely a concern for me because you have Maxey and Harden having to play it so much at the same time. And Embiid being like as good as he is at switching sometimes, like in the last few minutes of the game, like you don't want him doing that all game long. So the defense is the concern for me. I think the offense will be fine. They do hit. I mean, yes, Harden hitting step backs always seems improbable, he's been shooting the best of his career. So, yeah, I mean, I felt like the voicemail was like contradictory.
It was itself. A little contradictory. It was, I think I should have edited it further. I think his real point was like, you're ignoring defense because you're trying to coddle Maxey.
Yeah. Which I think with Maxey specifically, sometimes I do. This pod, I've already talked about it, but I do because of those things. That's why I don't trust the team to hold up defensively. I think offensively they have enough guys that can score. Unless all three of those guys are like going off, maybe not against the top offenses in the league, like, you know, the Dallas game. They just couldn't keep up. But yeah, I mean, look, would I love Jaden Springer to play some minutes for defensive purposes? Absolutely.
Oh, here we go.
Absolutely. Looking really good in the G League. He's got to learn how to shoot. Just catch and shoot, man. That's all you got to do. Don't do anything other than catch and shoot.
One more voicemail, 833 Lickface, and then we are done.
Hey, Spike and Mike, just want to ask you a question because, you know, the Sixers fans that we are, the Sixers are so good at building us up, giving us hope, and then ripping our hearts out when we least expect it. So have you two started to mentally and physically prepare for when the Sixers lose the NBA Finals in Game 7? Because losing 3 championships wasn't enough for Philly. We need to lose 4. And it has to be us. We're the only city that can handle it. Any other city would blow up. So it's going to happen. The Sixers are going to make it past the second round. They're going to get to the finals. And everyone's going to be like, wow, this is the year. We got James Harden and Joel still in their prime. And then bang, we lose in game 7. So I've started to accept it. I don't know if you guys feel that way. But I just want to know if you're ready because it's coming.
That to me is one of the most optimistic voicemails we've ever gotten. Absolutely. If they get to the conference finals and win the conference finals and represent the East in the Iverson finals, I've said this so many times, that the Iverson finals team is the worst finals team of all time.
Next to the Lob. Yeah. The only other team I would say is in competition is the LeBron team in 07 that
for sure.
got swept by the Spurs. But it had LeBron sure. instead
but
of
But at
Iverson.
Least they had LeBron instead of Iverson. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, look, I love that 01 team. And if we get back to the finals and lose to whoever, Phoenix, Golden State, Memphis, Clippers, whatever, then Denver, then like, awesome. I would be thrilled to lose in game 7. Obviously, when we get there, I will be heartbroken. I'll be doing this podcast upside down naked. But in the grand scheme of things, the Phillies run was incredible. The Eagles getting the Super Bowl was awesome. Like, this is good. That would be good. I would feel good. I would feel frustrated in the moment, but the Sixers getting all the way to the finals, losing and winning three games, that'd be great. I would take that. I would happily take that. And it would be very funny if Philadelphia lost three championships in the same year.
Yeah. Also, finals games start at 9 o'clock. I would be dead by the end of the final, so it wouldn't really matter to me. Doing fucking podcasts after finals games, it'd just be. I have a vacation scheduled right after that, and my wife will be going with my dog alone because I will have died by that point.
So. You've always liked sleep more than the Sixers. Nighttime sleep, not even morning sleep.
Well, I mean, it's not that I don't get very much, I think, is the problem. I think if I got more sleep, I would like the Sixers more. It's not that I love sleep. I just hate being so tired in the morning, but that's my own fault. It's my own fault.
The mornings typically start for some people around like 7 or 8.
Eight's a little late for grownups. No, I think. Not. Yeah, it is. Yeah. I mean, like, adults get up by 7.
Disagree. I mean, you can. I do, but yeah. I don't think eight is late. Even on a weekend, especially even if you have to.
Well, not weekend. I'm talking weekday.
Okay. Yeah, eight is on the later side, but I don't think it's ridiculous. And you wake up at what time?
4:10.
4:10. It used to be 3:30.
No. 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 No.
Okay.
No, I was always a 4 guy. To me, the line is 4. Before the 4 line. Is the before.
The line. The line is 4.
Well, because whatever. You know.
Look, whatever works for you. But if the Sixers get to the finals, you're going to have to change that.
Or just be tired.
Yeah, that's all.
This is what I'll say, and then we can end this. I've always answered the bell when I need to. There was one where, because of our schedules, I got up, I think, at 2:45 a.m.
That's maybe what I was thinking of 3:30, because we'd be on different days. Sometimes.
Well, yeah, because I think there was a playoff game that you could not watch live.
Yeah.
So by the time you were going to be done watching it, it was going to be like 12:30. And to me, it was easier for me to just watch the game and then get up at 2:45. Man, I was fucking miserable for that pod. So miserable. All right. Well, we will talk to you. So we have Indiana, and then who's Tuesday? It's back to back, right? It's Indiana and then somebody else on Tuesday.
Minnesota.
And then we'll podcast Wednesday night. So excited for the Sixers to lose the next two after this, but and hope you enjoyed the pod leading up to it.
Absolutely.
We'll talk to you Wednesday. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah. You know the case.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you. But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you!
Time for Plan B.